FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
This episode of the Financial Survival Network is brought to you in part by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of over 185 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at sandstormgold.com. That's sandstormgold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the New York Stock Exchange American as SAND.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 11/5/18. Hey, tomorrow is Election Day. Well, is that adding to the chaos? Will it matter one way or the other? I think the result is already in the can. It's already been discounted. Everybody knows it, but nobody wants to admit it. Hey, as always, be a part of the show. Write us, kl@kerrylutz.com. So New York on the rocks. New York is going to go bankrupt. Pension and retiree obligations, promises are totally out of control. Comrade de Blasio is not helping the situation. The unions own the comrade lock, stock, and barrel, and something's got to give. Well, hey, somebody who's going to tell us what's going to give is here now with us, John Rubino, dollarcollapse.com. John, happy Monday. Hey, we're in Hawaii.
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, I'm envious.
Yeah, well, but
it's getting cold. At least we're not in New York.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, like paying those taxes, because, hey, the solution to a moronic New York politician, and I repeat myself, is just raise taxes and everyone will pay. And there is going to be a wholesale rush for the exits in that state. I consider myself a trendsetter. I did it 6 years ago, but millions of people are going to leave that place because you won't be able to make a living, and you're already taxed at confiscatory levels. John, what is Joe Sixpack to do?
Well, let's flesh out this particular story, so people know why we're down on New York right now. They just announced that, in addition to all the other stuff that they owe $100 billion for retiree health care. In other words, people who used to work for the city and who are retiring collect health care from New York. And apparently, as part of the same story.
Lifetime. Free health care.
It said if you work for the city for 10 years.
Correct.
Part of your pension is a lifetime of health care after that. I had no idea.
I
lived in New York in the 80s, I would have gotten a government job just for that.
Oh, it's a criminal enterprise, a complete criminal enterprise from top to bottom. Government in New York, working for the government. They just give it away with two hands. Only governments can afford, in quotes, to do this. So something's going to give, because it's getting to the point where there will be a revolution among New York taxpayers, what few of them are left.
Yeah. Well, when we say unfunded liabilities, what that means is that they, in order to pay the promises that they've made, they needed to put a certain amount away. And the unfunded liability is the money they should have put away in anticipation of these big gain or these big charges coming down the pike at some point, but that they haven't put away yet. And so just for retiree health care, New York City was supposed to have put away $100 billion by now. And they also have $40 or $50 billion of just plain unfunded pension liabilities for the pensions they're supposed to pay out. And they owe another $40, $50 billion of debt. So a couple of hundred billion dollars is what they're on the hook for right now. And it's not clear, you know, how even New York City comes up with that money, right? It's a big city. It's a very rich city. At least a lot of sectors of it are really rich. But a couple of hundred billion dollars has got to be beyond the means of even New York City. So they're probably thinking, okay, this is in the future. We don't have to worry about it now. When the time comes, we'll just raise taxes on rich people.
Yeah.
And Kerry, you're living proof that that's a flawed believe, for a city, because capital is mobile. And if New York raises, I'm just guessing here, let's say they raise their income tax from 5% to 6%, whereas Miami has a 1% income tax. And it's right down there. New Yorkers know about Miami. And so they can easily just move down there and save 5% of their annual income, which for somebody who's in the 1%, which is the target of the, you know, future tax increase, that's serious money. Mm-hmm. Or they can move to the Caribbean, or they can move to Texas or someplace like that, where taxes are relatively low or there are other benefits. There's no reason why anybody has to stay put when a government is abusing them, a state government.
Yeah.
And that's kind of philosophically, that's as it should be from a libertarian standpoint. All the experimentation should be going on at the state and local levels. Mm-hmm. And the federal government should not be involved in the economy any more than it has to be, because when it gets involved, it's a monopoly, and you can't vote with your feet or with your pocketbook very easily if the federal government messes with you. But if state and local governments do, you can affect their behavior, in effect, by reacting to what they do to you. You know, if you like the way you're treated, you stick around, you bring more of your capital in. If you don't like the way you're being treated, you take off. And then they see that happening, and that's a signal to them to adjust their behavior or to do more of what they are doing or whatever. You know, they learn from that. And then everybody else learns from the things that work.
Very
true. That states and localities do. And so we're seeing New York do something that clearly isn't going to work down the road.
Oh, no. So it's unsustainable. But what they're trying to do is, hey, instead of get our house in order, let's get this awful guy in Florida, Gillum, who's going to double taxes on corporations, put in a state income tax. So we'll make Florida a high tax state, so people won't leave New York for Florida because the taxes will be the same. I think that's their unspoken strategy with the
that's kind of the European
like
Union strategy, where you bring a bunch of countries together into one entity, and then you set the tax rates and you tell them they have to keep their business taxes at this level and their income taxes at that level. Clearly, the left would love to see something like that imposed on the U.S. Mm-hmm. with all states levying taxes at Connecticut's level or California's level or New York City and state
is the highest combined rate by far, but California is the highest state rate. I think it's 13% on the wealthiest. This is madness, John.
Isn't that amazing? Because if you're making $1 million a year, you're already paying 30 or 40% income taxes. Mm-hmm. And then they dump another 10 or 15% on top of you, on top of the 40% that you're already paying. That seems like the kind of thing that would make people mad enough mm-hmm. to consider going someplace who doesn't do that, right?
Yeah.
And see, that's okay. In one way, that's a good thing, because it means the really egregious offenders among states and cities will be pushed into bankruptcy that much sooner by people leaving, right? That's what Chicago's going through right now. They've messed up their economy, and now people are leaving, and that's making the economy even worse at an accelerating rate in a kind of a negative feedback loop, right? It's a death spiral that they're in. New York looks like it's headed that way, apparently. California looks like it's headed that way. Mm. But the problem, you know, that's a good thing from a libertarian standpoint. You want failure out there to teach us all what not to do. However, the numbers are so big in this case that the federal government will be almost compelled to step in and bail these guys out when it blows up, which might also be part of the plan from New York's standpoint, is you just hand your debts off to the central government and then go on as before, you know, racking up new debts because your balance sheet has been wiped clean. And that becomes a national systemic problem for us, right? If we have to bail out $1 trillion of New York City and state debt, another trillion of California's, another trillion of Illinois, plus a lot of odds and ends out there like Kentucky and Connecticut, then the U.S. balance sheet gets even worse. And at some point out there, there's a number that freaks out the markets, right? It's not $20 billion, obviously, because we found out what that is. And it's not $150 billion if you include unfunded liabilities of the federal government and everything. It's not that, because that's already out there and the markets haven't freaked out yet. But at some point, something happens. Some number gets added to the federal government's liabilities that the markets won't tolerate anymore. Mm. And so these bailouts that are in prospect now for state and local public sector pensions might be the thing that does it. There's no way to know, because we won't know until it happens.
Yeah.
What the number is that blows the system up. But God, we've got to be getting close, because the numbers are insane already. Mm-hmm. We're up in the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 per capita debt for the U.S., depending on how you calculate it.
It's crazy.
That's on top of your mortgage, your credit cards, mm-hmm. your car loan, your student loans. Now we owe $60,000 or $70,000 of national debt.
Yep.
Somewhere out there is the number that blows up the bond market.
Exactly.
And we talk about things like state and local pensions. Basically, what we're saying is, here's another thing that might do it. We don't know if this is it. Excuse me. But it could do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to do it. It's a combination of things. All the bonds, the indebtedness, the capital expenditures. You know, New York City with the corrupt unions and all these mad, crazy regulations, it costs like four or five times more to build anything in New York or fix anything. And New York just wastes most of its tax revenue either on these entitlements that do nobody any good, welfare type payments, or on physical plant capital expenditures, which are good, except the way New York does it is so corrupt that it costs so much that it's just not effective, you know?
Really, can you imagine isn't. The complexity of trying to keep a city like New York running? This is kind of getting far afield from financial crisis, mm-hmm. but it's just astounding to me that any big city works at all, just because of the complexity of it.
Oh,
you've got all these roads that need to be fixed, and sewers, and electrical systems, and all of it has to work almost all the time. And how you mm-hmm. do that is, completely beyond me. It's astounding that these guys pull that off even as well as they do.
Yeah, as pathetic as they are, it's not easy. That's for sure. And they get it done, but it's getting harder and harder because less and less of the money is going there. More and more is going to social programs and pay and benefits. You can't outsource in New York. You can't do anything in New York. It's just horrible. The way the system's been set up.
And the other thing about New York is that it's similar to California in the sense that it's cyclical. New York booms in terms of tax revenue when the stock market is going up, because Wall Street generates huge mm-hmm. amounts of trading profits and all their bonuses get taxed and everything. And so New York is flush in a bull market and broke in a bear market. Same thing with California and Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
they don't generate the capital gains in a downturn that they generate in a bull market. And clearly we're headed for some kind of a bull market. Yeah, Kerry, you and I didn't talk about the slight uptick in volatility in the stock market because we missed last week. But we saw a huge spike in volatility, which is continuing today. The Dow's up couple of hundred points, I think, right? 190 points.
Haven't had a chance to look. I've been flying, but yeah.
But any day that's less than
20.
200 or 300 points on the Dow is like unchanged.
Yeah, it's like quiet. The VIX, the VIX was back down to like 12, 13, and then it mm-hmm. like shot up like dramatically last week and the week before that. I mean, it was really up.
And this is really familiar. This is what happened in 2007 when things were going great. Everything was booming. And then the stock market started to go not just up, but down and up and down and up. And we had these mm-hmm. monster days mm-hmm. in both directions, which in retrospect was a topping process for the bull market.
Yeah.
And then it fell out of bed the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing the early stages of that repeating. We don't know if this is the thing, we don't know if this is it, but it feels like it did prior to the crash of 2008, 2009.
Well, the VIX,
so people should be very aware of this at least.
Hey, the volatility index, it's called the VIX. On October 29th, it was at 26 points, but it shot up even higher. That's just the closing for the day. And we've seen the VIX, like, it was down like 9 or 10 6 months ago before the market started getting crazy. And now it's, you know, now it's at 20. And that's an indication that we're going to have rough markets ahead. It could settle down a bit. The one thing the VIX does, because of the way it's calculated, is once you have that initial push, then it settles down and you have all this option decay, and it winds up losing value very quickly and getting back down to normal again. But what we see here is a very different pattern than a year ago. It's a sawtooth pattern, literally. And you could pretty much bet that this is going to be for the next couple of years, at least. So these hedge fund guys, they don't really know what to do here, John, do they?
Well, that's another really interesting thing that's going on lately, but it has actually been going on for a few years now, is hedge funds aren't doing very well. Now, in theory, hedge fund managers are the smartest guys in the investment world. That's the top of the food chain there. Because they're paid incredibly well, and their firms have extreme flexibility in what they do. And you put that together with a smart money manager, and in theory, you get the highest possible returns.
Yes.
But what has been happening lately is hedge funds have been underperforming just, you know, buy and hold the S&P 500 or buy and hold treasury bonds, depending on the thrust of the hedge fund that we're talking about. And it's been going on for quite a while, and you're seeing a lot of big name hedge funds, guys that have been around for a long time and made money in good markets and bad markets, unable to make money now. You're seeing a lot of other hedge funds just close up shop, hand back the money to their clients because they just cannot figure out these markets. So the question is, why? What's happening? And I think a big part of it is quantitative easing and other forms of market manipulation on the part of governments. When governments step in and buy, for instance, treasury bonds or the S&P 500 equities, they don't do it analytically. They just throw money at a representative basket of whatever they're trying to buy. And that pushes everything up in lockstep. So if you're a hedge fund manager with a trading system that relies on some securities being more valuable than others, and you're going to short the less valuable and buy the more valuable and make money in that way, but everything is going up at the same rate, at the same amount, your model doesn't work anymore. And it's not because the model is flawed. It's because the world has changed and governments are pushing up asset prices in lockstep, which means that the price signaling mechanism of the markets no longer works. So you can't use price as a signal that tells you how to allocate capital anymore, which means huge amounts of misallocated capital are out there. Because entrepreneurs and other investors are pretty much having to throw money at their markets randomly because the price signaling mechanism doesn't work anymore. There's nobody telling them what is a good idea and a bad idea. And that can't help but blow up on us at some point. If we've got a entire global financial system that's rife with malinvestment, which is the implication of hedge funds not being able to figure out what's valuable and less valuable in this market, then those things are going to start blowing up. So they'll be huge and varied and widespread when the malinvestment starts blowing up. And that's still out there in our futures too.
Yeah, when it starts unraveling. You know,
there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong here.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's gone right, but a lot of stuff that inevitably will have to go wrong. Hey, any further opinions on the so-called trade war with U.S. and China? I would call it a economic war. I don't buy that it's a trade war. I think we've been at war with China economically for a generation now, but nobody really, up until Trump, has wanted to face the music. What do you think is going to come of this?
Well, you can definitely make the case that China has cheated. They hack our corporations and the government, and they steal whatever they can steal and they use it for their own advantage. And when a big American company wants to invest in China to get access to that gigantic market, they insist that that company hand over its intellectual property
Correct.
As the cost of doing business in China. And that's cheating.
Yeah.
So that Trump would like to negotiate an end to those behaviors on China's part is completely reasonable. Mm-hmm. But China, for its part, has had civil unrest leading to a revolution in living memory. And so they're terrified of the consequences of not providing good jobs for all the people who have come to expect good jobs in China.
That's so kind of their deal. That's their social contract, is don't go storming Tiananmen Square and we will be certain you'll have rising living standards and you'll have work and you'll get three squares a day and just trust us. And now that's kind of being threatened, isn't it?
Well, that's the threat that they perceive from having to stop doing a lot of the things that they were doing, which worked well for them. So if they can't steal our intellectual property, then maybe they can't build as many profitable factories and maybe they can't hire as many people. And maybe those people who don't get hired start a revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sounds kind of crazy from our point of view, but they remember it happening.
Well, it happened in
just the 1950s, you know.
We have our built-in, when you go to London to Hyde Park, there's Speaker's Corner and people get up on the soapbox and they can talk about anything they want as long as they don't besmirch the royals. And kind of our whole society, the internet, everything else, we've got our own like virtual Speaker's Corner, and the fact that you can bitch about stuff and complain and nobody's probably listening anyway, but at least you can do it. At least you have an outlet, kind of stops a lot of that revolutionary stuff from ever happening. Although now with the type of political unrest we've seen, well, it's not widespread. It's more isolated. It certainly has a chance to be, as devastating as what the Chinese expect. I mean, what's going to happen with this election tomorrow if the left loses, John? Are they going to go full on Mad Max?
Well, we are kind of drifting towards civil unrest lately. And I would argue that a big part of that is that we borrowed so much money in the past to take care of things in the past that our ability to keep everybody happy in the present is constrained because we're so deeply in debt. And that is leading more and more people to be disgruntled, to be frustrated. And part of that was, you know, free trade worked at the macro level, but really hurt a subset of the population, which is the high school educated white guys who used to have good unionized factory jobs. And now they're, you know, greeters at Walmart or something mm-hmm. like that. So they feel like they've been screwed over by the system. And then there are other groups of people that feel the same way. And they've coalesced into basically Trump's core constituents. And on the left, they see the rise of Trump as, you know, analogous to Hitler in 1932 and something that has to be stopped in its tracks before it turns into full on fascism.
By any means necessary.
Yeah. So you've got people who really don't want to compromise anymore on both sides. Mm-hmm. And the politicians are having to listen to that. So you're seeing the major markets or the major political parties move to the fringes because that's where the core votes are.
Yes.
So we're seeing a lot of people on the very far left, people who wouldn't have been considered by the Democratic Party for major statewide office, run and have a good chance of winning this time around.
Yeah, well, I say the blue wave is the tidy bowl wave. It's going to go down the toilet. And the reason I know this, well, there's several reasons. Look at the crowds that Trump is still attracting. Okay, we've never seen, it's one thing during the election, but, you know, the presidential election, but now he's still getting 30,000-50,000 people at some of these venues, John. The other thing is the Senate seats all seem to be heading towards Republican. A lot of the major ones that are held by Democrats now, if you can't win the Senate seat in that state, why are you going to win the House seats? It looks like in California, the effort to get rid of the few remaining Republicans, not successful. And then the biggest bellwether to me is New Jersey, or as Governor Tom Kaine used to call it, New Jersey. you know, there you got like the biggest crook on the planet and abuser of women and stuff talking about Menendez. He's in trouble. I don't think he's going to lose, but it's going to be a closer race than anybody ever dreamed possible. And for all these reasons, I'm just wondering if the left really gets repudiated this election, what is their response going to be? Are we going to see full-scale riots here, John?
You know, I think either way, we have rising civil unrest from here. If, if the left were to get shut out, which I don't think they will, I mean, the congressional races, at least, look like they're pretty close, with probably a 51% chance that the Democrats take the House. Definitely not the Senate, though. But if they were to get shut out, yeah, we would see more Antifa in the streets, and because that would be their only way of making themselves heard.
Don't forget. Don't forget that the same people espousing the so-called blue wave are the same ones who get up every morning and thank God for President Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah.
I can't forget that.
The polls right now that favor the Democrats in Congress are less definite than the polls that favored Hillary on the day of the presidential election. So anything can happen.
And don't forget, I proclaimed October National Lie to Your Pollster Month. So I bet at least a few hundred lied to their pollster. And now, you know, the weird thing with cell phones and everything, John, and the fact is you see a strange number on your phone. It's like, oh, it's somebody trying to telemarketer or robocall. Screw this. I'm not answering it. Go to voicemail. And it takes them now 30 calls, John, to reach one person in a political poll. That was a number that I heard that was absolutely shocking to me, but not really shocking. And then the other thing, John, is, you know, we have a data economy. So whatever questions you answer on a political survey becomes data and can be purchased by political parties. And you know that they can connect your phone number, your cell phone number, with who you are, your name. Okay, they do that. And they're keeping a database on your preferences. It's one thing if they're watching how you spend your money, consumer stuff, that's what they do, and they target you. But you don't want political parties, and you have no idea who's surveying you either. So for all these reasons, the polls are going to become less and less accurate and telling in the years to come. But I think we're in that trend now. And so you can't believe the polls. And then it comes down to indirect indicators. And that's what I think you're going to be seeing, these indirect indicators. If there's really erosion in the African-American vote and in the Hispanic vote, John, you know, the Democrats got to get 90% of the black vote or they cannot win an election. You know, that is a fact. If they're only going to get 85%, they could have some real problems. Anyway, I don't want to talk about politics. It's just I'm just bringing it up as are we going to get into this thing where we get like major violence in the country with, you know, open battles on the streets from one contingent fighting another? I mean, you're not going to see me doing it because, look, the whole system's corrupt. To fight for one corrupt part of it against the other, forget it. I'm not going to do that. But there are certain people that hold it very, they take it very closely and very deeply, and they're prone to it. I mean, I think no matter what the outcome, more violence is coming down the pipeline, which can't be good for financial markets.
Yeah. Well, I think whoever ends up winning tomorrow, it doesn't really matter to the big stuff, which is the amount of debt that we're taking on. We will continue to borrow insane amounts of money until some market action stops us. In other words, until nobody wants the currency that we're using to borrow money anymore. Right. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether Trump's in office. It doesn't matter whether the Democrats control Congress. It doesn't matter whether a Democrat takes the presidency next time around. We know from recent history that whoever's in charge, whatever combination of parties are in charge, we're going to borrow too much money.
Yes.
Going forward.
Correct.
And we'll keep doing that until it blows up on us. Based on a lot of the stuff you and I talk about today and a lot of the stuff we've talked about in the past, that day shouldn't be too far off. You know, these numbers are just so crazy. They can't go on much longer like this.
You know, that just reminds me of Murphy's Law. You know, if something can go wrong, it will. And then there was O'Brien's corollary, which said Murphy was an optimist, right?
Yeah.
And that's
it's all
I
in
think.
The timing. You know, when you screw up, you can get away with screwing up for quite a while frequently in life.
Depending on who you're married to, yes. Very true.
But eventually, dysfunctional behavior creates so many imbalances in life that it all blows up on you. And the blow up, when it comes, seems very sudden frequently.
Yeah.
But it's actually
really.
Something that's been building up for a really long time.
It's a process. And it's a process.
Yeah. And so you're not an overnight disaster. You've actually spent a lot of time creating the disaster.
A lot of hard work. A lot of hard work to get where we are today. But I totally am with you. Disaster, it's always around the corner. It's amazing that we put it off as long as we have. From 08, 09, 3 days before the food truck stopped delivering food, till the Fed backstopped every bank's letter of credit because the banks didn't trust each other's letters of credit, but they didn't have a choice to once the Fed stepped in there. I mean, that can repeat itself, but history rhymes, it doesn't repeat, so it's going to be different than the last one. Of that, you can be sure. Hey, make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com, sign up for his newsletter, sign up for ours, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Hey, as always, we invite you to be part of the show and write us kl@carrylutz.com. Sorry I haven't gotten to your letters recently. They've kind of been piling up. Your emails have been piling up on my inbox. I don't even know how many are there, but we will get to them again next week when I am back in the continental United States. I don't think much of Oahu. It's like got all of the charm of Miami Beach with none of the benefits. You know, it's just a very noisy place, even without the hotel strikes. But Kauai is a piece of paradise on earth. If you haven't been here, I strongly recommend that you check it out. Hey, John, we will catch you next week. Oh, the Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Till next week, John.
See you, Carrie.
And we'll talk about the election results briefly. All right. You be well.
You too.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.